There's a hollow feeling that hits us after the uniform comes off. You did everything right, but the mission is just gone. The team's gone, and the days start to feel like noise. You want your drive back. You want to wake up with purpose, feel useful again, and know that you still matter to the people who are around you. Today's episode talks about how service can keep going long after getting out of the military, even when anxiety, PTSD, and that lost feeling are riding in the passenger seat along with you. Our guest today, Lindsay Gutierrez, found her way back to meaning through advocacy, community, and a decision that was so intense, most people never even consider it. Her decision to become a living organ donor, and then doing it again. This is the kind of story that can shake you awake and point you toward your own next step, whatever that is for you. But before we get into this episode, I want to take a moment to raise awareness for something I feel is deeply important to our community, the Global War on Terrorism Memorial Foundation. This organization is working to build a permanent national memorial in Washington, D.C. to honor the service members, families, and civilians who are impacted by the Global War on Terrorism. This memorial will serve as both a tribute to those who served and a way to ensure that their sacrifices are recognized and remembered for generations to come. If you'd like to learn more or find out how you can support their mission, visit GWATMemorialFoundation.org. Now let's get into today's episode. Hey, Lindsay, welcome to the show. Really glad to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to share my story.
Yeah, absolutely. And we were talking a little bit before the episode started and before the recording started, I should say. And I was saying I've been really interested in your story and I've wanted to learn a little bit more about it. So I've been looking forward to this conversation for quite some time. But before we dive into your story, for the listeners maybe who aren't familiar with you and your background and everything, could you just give a little quick intro about yourself and who you are, just for the listeners maybe who don't, like I said, don't know who you are?
Sure. So the short and sweet of it is I'm an Air Force veteran. I am a dual living organ donor, a social worker, military spouse, and a pig and pot, or I'm sorry, potbelly pig and dog mom. Mouthful to say all of that.
And somehow you found time to squeeze in this interview. So I thank you for that with all the stuff you have going on. Yeah. So take us back a little bit, you know, in your life, as far as joining the Air Force, what kind of prompted you to want to join the Air Force and not, you know, the Army, which obviously is way better. And, you know, what was your experience like in the Air Force?
So originally I had zero intention of joining any military branch. It just was not on my radar. I grew up thinking I was just going to take a traditional path, which was for me, graduate high school, college, start your job, life happens. And that is not what happened fully. It did partially happen, but not in the way that I was expecting it. So after college, I decided I was going to just head back home, started a job somewhere. It was also during the recession. And so this was around 2007 is whenever I started my first job. And it wasn't an ideal job, but it was a job that I needed just to start making an income right after I graduated. And so I started working, wasn't really feeling confident in what I was doing. It wasn't exactly what I wanted to do, but I knew I needed to do something and I was wanting more. So I gave it some time and a few years later worked at another job, but I was still running into that same kind of issue of I just don't feel satisfied. Something just is missing. Mm-hmm. And around 2010 is whenever I finally made that big decision that I was going to use my theater degree and it was going to be applicable somewhere. And that place was going to be in Los Angeles. So I made the big decision to move out to LA and a friend from college and I got an apartment together. And again, I ran into the same problem. This is not fulfilling. What is going on? What, like, am I doing something wrong? And that is when things started getting into motion with the military as an option. My grandfather, who served in the Air Force for 20 years, had always put it in the back of our minds, all of my cousins and me, that try the military. The military is a great place. You might like it. Who knows? Just give it a shot. I was very immature at the time and didn't make anything of it whenever I was growing up and in high school, getting through college. Just nothing was exactly the right fit for me mm-hmm. because I wanted to just do this path that I thought I was supposed to do. Well, LA is what really prompted me to consider the military. So I decided after several months of living in LA and then relocating again down to Orange County that maybe I should look into the recruiting station and just see what they have to offer. So I narrowed it down to Navy and Air Force. And I really wanted to do Air Force just because that's what my grandfather had done. But I was open to any branch, honestly. And truly, I like the Marines because their uniforms are pretty cool. But now thinking back on it, like, I'm really glad I went with the Air Force because it was so much better. So ended up going into the delayed entry program. And I want to think this was around May of 2010. And then months and months were passing. And at this point, I was about to turn 27. My birthday's in December. And so it was 26, 27, something like that. And I was like, I don't have a waiver I can get. I have to get into the military. This is it. This is my only chance. Of course, I waited to the last minute to do sure. everything. And that time came in September. And I got the call from my recruiter a couple weeks into September. And he told me, hey, you're going. This is it. But originally, he had said I was going to go a few weeks before that even. That didn't work out. And then when I got this call on a random Thursday, Friday at 7 a.m., I knew something was up. And then a few days later, I went to basic training. Literally called me right before the weekend started. My dad flew in to LAX. I picked him up. He packed all my stuff up, drove home to Oklahoma, and I went to basic training in September.
Wow. So, yeah, having it not even be on your radar to jumping into it like that, and definitely being probably one of the older people in your basic training class, right? And I was one of the older ones in my class too, but I'd gone through, I think I was 24 at that point. So I wasn't one of the 18-year-old kids. You know, I was a little bit older, but sure. but I was still able to kind of hack it with them, which, you know, the older you get and now sitting here in my 40s, I know I would not be able to run around with the 18-year-old kids. So, you know, anyone who goes in a little bit later than the average person, I always look at them like, you probably had a hard time, but you made it through. So you obviously have some grit and determination in you to be able to make it through, right? And so after your service, you, I believe you became a social advocate through pageantry for stuff, right? Did you, was this something directly related to veterans that you were working with, or how did that all come to be?
That's really how it started.
Okay.
I was already into this path of advocacy and support and helping others in the military. I was security forces, but even through these deployments and the volunteer activities that I did, it was all about helping other people, helping each other, and just being there for your team. And after I separated from the Air Force, I was feeling lost. I didn't really know what I was doing. I had to basically redefine who I was again. Mm-hmm. And I felt that God had called me. My faith is a huge part of my life. I felt that God had called me into the military. And then what? Now this door is shut 6 years later. I have an honorable discharge. I did these great things in the Air Force. I got a couple of degrees, and I can't find a job in anywhere in doing anything. Nobody was wanting to hire me for whatever reason. So I was lost. I was confused. I didn't know really how to approach that. So I thought, I guess I'll go back to school again. Why not? Let's do school again. And I felt like social work was it. That's really where I wanted to go. During that time is whenever I learned about Ms. Veteran America. And it was a system that really supports homeless women veterans and advocates for Final Salute. So that led me into this area of, again, helping others and learning about how I can really be there for those who served and for people who I could really connect with, especially being a woman veteran. And that opened up so many doors for me, just becoming that person, getting out in my community and meeting people and learning where I could have a place and where I could fit in. And of course, that just expanded even further the further I got into my social work education and really participated in a lot of pageants over the years and had some amazing titles. And my platform was always about advocacy for women vets, and specifically now as an organ donor, bringing awareness to that area that a lot of people just don't consider.
Right. And I'm sensing a theme here, and probably the listeners are probably gathering on the same theme of service and helping others and that type of thing. You know, you don't, I mean, not everybody, but a lot of people, they don't necessarily join the military because it's for them necessarily. They look at it as they're serving their country at, you know, as opposed to I'm serving myself by joining this. It's not the best pay. It's not the best, you know, hours. It's not the best, you know, work environment, period. It's dangerous. It's dirty. It's all the things that don't add up to a great work environment, but people do it anyways, because it's like, hey, my country needs people and, you know, why not me? That type of thing. And so that's kind of the attitude that I'm sensing coming out of you, is like, why were you not fulfilled in those earlier jobs that you were going through and all that stuff? It's probably because you, I don't know exactly what all those jobs were, but I'm guessing you probably weren't helping other people in those jobs, right?
No, definitely not. It wasn't anything like I was experiencing with the military and mm-hmm. then what I'm feeling now in the role that I have. And the common theme is that integrity to want to serve others and that yeah. desire to want to do something bigger and better and helping humanity.
Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with that, right? We need more people like that who are going to, you know, put themselves out there to help other people, to support people in ways that maybe they can't support themselves, whether it's, you know, a physical limitation, mental limitation, or, you know, all sorts of different things, diseases, all these things, or natural disasters. And there's all sorts of different things that people need help with. And, you know, I'm not saying that you're doing every single one of those things I just listed, but there are people out there who might be feeling like they're wandering through life too, not knowing where is that sense of purpose? Where do I feel like I'm contributing to something? Look around you. There are so many people who are in need of help, whether it's someone who is homeless or who's, you know, in a, you know, a hospital by themselves. They have no family or something like there's people out there who need help with something. And there's all sorts of things out there. So definitely hats off to you for figuring that out, I guess, is probably the right way to phrase it, is eventually you had to figure out that that's kind of what you were missing in your life, right?
Absolutely. There's a space and a place for all of us. Yeah. And by no means did this happen overnight. This was years in the making. I mean, from the time I was probably really in my mid to late 30s, I guess, that's really where it started, because that's whenever I had gotten out in 2016, and then things just really started going from there. But it was slow and it was hard, and it wasn't something that I just knew off the bat, but I had this intuition. I think that God was, again, leading me to where I needed to be and to use my experiences into this new chapter. But it didn't come without any hardships. I mean, sure. I had PTSD. I had anxiety. I was worried. I was scared. I didn't feel like I fit in anywhere. It's all these different feelings that I think a lot of people can relate to.
I was just going to say, welcome to the club.
Yeah. It's like at some point up, who doesn't have some of these things? Right. You're in better company knowing that there's a lot of people who do. And sure. That's what's great about where we're at now in society, is I think we're more open and willing to put a name and to advocate for that and to acknowledge that this is here and that it's okay. I'm going to own this. Mm-hmm. And here's how I'm going to use it to help somebody else.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, just finding other ways to be able to help people. And you briefly touched on it, and I don't think you did it any justice, so I want to circle back to this, but probably one of the most selfless things you could possibly do is being an organ donor. And so this was back in 2022, if I'm not mistaken, that you became part of the first living donor chain within the VA's history. Is that correct?
That is correct. Very wow. accurate. Yes.
So tell us about that and kind of what motivated you to become a living organ donor. Was it someone that you knew who needed an organ and you're trying to help out with that? Or was it just, hey, I think I got an extra, you know, organ here, just collecting dust. I'll just hand right. it over, you know?
Not exactly something that people think about every single day.
No.
But I do think it's something that we consider because it's something that we look at for our driver's license. So yep. At some point, somebody has looked and said, yes, I want to be an organ donor. But most people don't say, I want to be an organ donor while I'm alive. That's the difference.
Yep.
For me, this happened right after I had competed in a pageant, and that was in November of 2021. While I was there, I was connecting with one of the other competitors, and she was talking to me about a friend of hers that was needing, I believe he was needing a liver donation. And so me being O positive, I knew that I could donate to anybody. And I was like, without even thinking, I said, oh, why? If he needs anything, let me know. This had never crossed my mind ever before. I don't know where this came from. So that's, again, God speaking through me and telling me this is something to just do. There's people who need your help. Thankfully, this gentleman got the care that he needed from my understanding, but a couple months had passed. And then all of a sudden, I'm at work. And at this point in my life, I was doing congressional casework for our district office in Georgia. And we get all sorts of and types of magazines and newspapers and articles and all sorts of things. Well, this particular magazine, the Military Times, came to our office one day. We'd never received it before, ever, in the 3 years that I had been there. And I open it up, and all of a sudden I see an ad for Dove, which is Donor Outreach for Veterans. And they specifically connect veterans in need of a kidney to potential donors in the community. It can be anybody. So it's really outsourced and through a community-based approach.
Okay.
So I thought, well, I already said it once before. Why not? let's see what this is all about. So I reached out to Sharon Kreitzer at Dove and had my intake. One thing led to another. I had my medical testing, which is the million-dollar workup, by the way. So it literally checks everything inside and out from head to toe to make sure that you are a perfect candidate and match for somebody. And I got the call I was hoping for, which was that I was a great, perfect match for somebody. And I had the opportunity to choose whenever I wanted to have my surgery. I opted to do the Memorial Day weekend. And that was in May of 2022. Because I knew I was going to be donating to a veteran at Dove and being a veteran myself, that was really important.
Sure.
I have to throw this in there because this is really important, but I also looked up the Yankee schedule to see when they were playing. And it happened to be the weeks that I was going to be in New York City. So I was like, perfect. This is great. We all get something out of this.
That's great.
So, and that launched the first chain donation in VA history because I was originally paired with another gentleman named Kevin, who's also a Dove recipient. Reggie, my recipient, his wife, Wendy, wanted to donate to him, but they weren't a match. But Wendy was a match to Kevin, hence the cross donation or the pair donation. There are many different names for it, but we were cross matched. And that's how it kicked off this chain donation at the VA, which is setting a huge precedent because if anybody veteran wise knows how strict and red tape the VA is, this was a huge milestone to accomplish.
Yeah, being able to move that over the finish line is huge because just sometimes getting an appointment with a VA, you know, you call in, you know, January and they're like, oh, yeah, we'll have an appointment in July or something. And geez, come on. You know, and I'm saying that in general terms, that's exactly what's going on with the VA, trying to make people, you know, I'm not bad talking the VA. It's just there are some long wait times, you know, on occasion, but. You know, that's, again, another selfless thing that you're doing. And not only did you do this selfless thing, literally giving a piece of yourself to somebody else, you said, hey, you know what? I didn't have enough of that. Let me do it again. And so you recently became a dual donor. And that was part of your liver, correct?
That was
2024. Is that right?
Yeah.
Which when I was kind of looking into your you know, background in history and stuff, trying to do some research on this, that was surprising to me that, you know, 2022 and then 2024, it seemed like really close together time-wise, as far as being able to make two donations like that in a lifetime period is pretty incredible. But that close together to me seemed like it was just way too close, but apparently not. And the doctors obviously know better than me. I'm not a doctor or anything. So, but tell us about that. Was that just another one of these same kind of situations through Dove?
So that prompted me because Dove really put so much into my heart as far as wanting to help people in this capacity. And it has also led to what I'm doing with my doctoral research now as a doctoral social work student. So all of this is starting to come together, but Dove kicked everything off. About a year after donating my kidney, I joined a group of other donors, recipients, medical professionals, family members, you name it, which is a big group of us. And we got together through this organization, and it was through Embark was the name of the company. And they hosted a trip for all of us to really raise awareness for organ donation and the need for that. So that the goal of this whole trip for all of us who were able to go was to summit on World Kidney Day, which was March 10th, I believe, of that year. And this was in 2023. Okay. And that trip is what inspired me to talk to more people about organ donation and learned about some other dual donors on that trip. And my conversations with them just kept igniting that flame of, you need to do this again. You have to. There's something else that you can do. You're not done yet. So once I moved up here to the Maryland area, I was already interested in donating through Johns Hopkins because of their reputation for what they do in the donation space. Mm-hmm. So I was like, well, I'm getting this job up here in Maryland, and Johns Hopkins is in Maryland. So all these things, again, are falling into place. Like, it just makes sense. Because I originally had reached out to Johns Hopkins earlier, but they needed to have a specific amount of time, and that was at least a year post-donation before they could look at me again. So every donation center is different for how long that wait time is once you've donated before. And it was just perfect timing. I moved up to the Maryland area in April of 23. And then a year later is whenever I donated, I started that process. And in April of 2024 is whenever I donated 40% of my liver. And this time it wasn't through anybody through Dove. It was just somebody who was in the recipient list or database at Johns Hopkins. So I had no idea who they were. I knew nothing about this person other than it was a young woman who was smaller in stature, which is why they only needed 40%, because you could take up to 65%. So it's very dependent on the size of the person. And that's what I knew. That's how they equated it to about 40%. Okay. And that happened. And I became part of the dual donor club on April 30th, 2024.
Wow. Having gone through that experience twice, I mean, for someone like you who seems to find fulfillment from helping other people, I got to imagine that just filled you right up. You're like, your cup was probably overflowing as far as, you know, feeling like you had a purpose and a meaning in life, right? As opposed to the way you were before joining the military, feeling like you weren't really satisfied with what was going on. That did it for you, right? I would imagine.
That was honestly it. And who'd have thought, for me, it was donating two of my organs. Mm-hmm. It's not that way for everybody, but everybody has that purpose and that drive and something that they are being led to support or to do or to be a part of. It's there. And I never would have imagined in a million years mine would have been giving up two organs. Right. But it's the most selfless and incredible act that I have ever been a part of in my life. And if I could do it again, I would. If I had more organs to give while I am alive, I would give them because it was that fulfilling.
Sure. Yeah. And you know, for, you know, any, I don't want to say normal person, because I'm not saying that you're abnormal, but it's rare that you'll find someone who's a dual donor like that. Right. And so, but for other people, like you said, when you get your driver's license, you fill out whether you want to be an organ donor or not. And my mindset has always been like, well, I'm done using them. So yeah, why not? You know, but, you know, in your case, you still technically could have been using those organs, and you decided, you know what, that's going to go to somebody else. And that's okay. I have what I need to keep moving on, and those people now have what they need to be able to move on as well. And that's, you know, very selfless and I think is a, you know, absolutely wonderful thing. Obviously, like you said, that's not for everybody. Not everyone's going to want to give up literally a piece of them to, you know, help somebody else like that. But there's something else out there. If you're wandering around there feeling like you're not fulfilled, there's something missing in life, there's something else. And I think using you as an example, you kept your eyes open for things that maybe weren't necessarily on your radar, but you picked up on those things and you said, you know what, why not? Let me give it a try and see how this goes. And then you do it and it turns out like, hey, that's the thing that I've been missing all this time. And you could have tried some of these things and said, you know what, that's not really doing it for me. And you, okay, well, keep trying the next thing. And I think that's the kind of the process, the natural process that people should be going through to figure out what is that thing for me that I'm going to feel fulfilled. I don't know what that is for any of the listeners. I don't know what it is for you. Maybe it's an organ donation. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's something completely different. But, you know, just be open to these opportunities as they kind of present themselves to you and try things, you know. Now, you also talked about, just briefly, you mentioned, you know, being a doctoral student, focusing on, you know, kind of more your social work side of things. But you also are kind of focused on the psychological care for, like, living organ donors too, right? Now, for the donor, I'm just curious, like, what are some of the challenges that they may face? Maybe it's before or even after their donation. What are some of the kind of more unique challenges that they face?
It's different for everyone. I will say that.
Sure.
Knowing my personal experience, and this is where I draw from and what has inspired me to look more at the psychosocial post-donation care for donors. There's so much hype and excitement before you donate. And a lot of the attention is on you as the donor when you're going through this process of the testing and then the medical professionals looking after you and everybody making sure that you're okay. Is there anything that we can get you or that you need? There's so much of that. So you also have support groups and people that you can reach out to and other mentors. A lot of organ donation centers have that mentorship built in as well. It's afterwards, though, that everything changes. Mm-hmm. What I could equate it to was almost like a postpartum depression.
Okay.
I don't have human kids, but I can imagine that is something very similar because you have all this generated thrill and it's a whirlwind of situations happening. And then you go through the surgery and you wake up and you're, okay, now what? I have to heal. There's a process for this, but now what?
Right.
What am I doing? And that's kind of what I was running into. So for my kidney donation, I was experiencing some kind of depression and anxiety with that. And I was like, I just don't know. What am I going to do? That's it. There's nothing more. That question kept going through my mind over and over and over again. And my social work team, my support system here at home, everywhere was great and amazing, but it's not until you really experience it that you really know what to do. Mm-hmm. And that's whenever I just knew I needed to communicate my needs and talk to my medical team at Mount Sinai, which is where I donated my kidney through, and just letting them know this is what's going on and trying to work through some of these issues. And it was completely the opposite whenever I donated my liver, because it was like my body had already known this is what I'm going through. I've done this before, but I was giving myself grace and I was allowing myself time to heal, because with my kidney, I was kind of comparing my healing journey to somebody else's that I would see online and think, like most of us do just in general, every day we're comparing ourselves to other people and their successes. That's what I was doing with my kidney. I was like, well, this person's out there running and already doing these things 2 weeks later. Why am I not able to do that? I could barely walk.
Right.
And everybody's journey is totally different. And I learned the second time around, you have to just let your body heal. Just let it do what it is meant to do and just heal. And so that's what I focused on and that's what I did. We have milestones that we meet as donors. So I go in for my checkup a few days later after discharge, and then a few weeks, and then it's a month check-in, and then it's 3 months, and then 6 months, and your year, and then your 2 year. And then really after your 2 year, you're kind of released. But in between those check-ins, there's really not much that goes on or that you're doing. It's up to you as the donor to decide, do I want to connect with the community of people? Do I want to get involved in doing X, Y, Z? What do I want to do? You may not want to do anything. Sure. But for some people like me, I thrive on being around other like-minded people and wanting to support my community and getting out and doing something. And so that's where I noticed there's very little support. And I decided I want to try to fill this gap. What can I do? How can I be a part of this solution? And that's where I'm at with my doctoral studies and looking at that.
That's awesome. Because again, that's another way that you're going to be able to help other people, but you might not have other organs to be able to donate from yourself right now. That's not an option, but there's other people out there who do have organs and they are going to be donating, and that this is a thing that will continue to happen. And those people, like you needed, are going to probably need some sort of support. And so having someone like you, or, you know, other people who are in that space to be able to support them is going to help them get through that time, you know, for the same type of things that you were talking about. And I'm sure there are other things too, but there's all sorts of things that people might be dealing with, and having someone who has been there could be very beneficial. I know I've talked to a lot of veterans who they go to a therapy, but they don't really want to talk to anybody if they weren't a combat veteran themselves, or sure, or something along those lines, which, you know, everybody is different on that. You know, some people do, some people don't, and whatever, that's fine. But again, it may be a similar situation where it's like, well, you never donated an organ, so you wouldn't know what I'm going through. And well, in your case, you've donated too, so you know exactly what they're going through.
That's serious.
And you can at least, you know, empathize with what it is that they've right, dealt with. And I know you've also been active in other veteran organizations. Pinup for Vets is one of the organizations. I had Gina on the show, I think last year, and some other, Jennifer Marshall, I had on the show as well. Yeah. And met a bunch of the pinups at MIC a couple of years ago. And that was just a, you know, great time. They're a great group of people. And that, for listeners who aren't familiar with Pinups for Vets, tell us a little bit about the organization and what your role is and kind of what you guys do.
Pinups for Vets is incredible. I'm so thankful that this came into my life. And I had actually learned about Pinups for Vets about, gosh, like 2017. Like, you know, I've known about them for almost 10 years now. But it wasn't until last year that I decided to apply as an ambassador for Pinups for Vets, and because I love the focus and the mission, and that's really to create the calendars that we do yearly, and we use the proceeds of those calendar sales and some of the other items that is on the Pinups for Vets website to help bring morale and care packages to deployed veterans, and bring in the calendars to veterans and some of the state halls and the VA facilities, and really just helping people and boosting that sense of camaraderie with each other, and thanking them for their service and letting people know that you're not alone. That's mm-hmm. essentially what we are all about, is connecting as women veterans in this really unique way in the pinup style, because who doesn't love the pinup style? I mean, honestly, it's just a really amazing, iconic look.
Right.
And it's amazing whenever we do go out to these different facilities with some of the World War II, the Korean War veterans. I mean, you name, you know, that amazing generation of veterans, and they see us, and it brings back those memories for them.
I'm sure it does. I've seen some of the pictures and from the calendar, and, you know, the social media, and having met, you know, a bunch of the pinups, and they were all dressed up and in that kind of attire and stuff at the conference. It was like you were looking back in time at that kind of, you know, old fashioned look, but, you know, a classy, you know, it just looks nice. You know, it's not like, it's done tastefully, and it's really, really great the way it's all done. And, you know, you were mentioning some of the stuff that you guys raised money for. And another thing that Gina had mentioned when I had spoke to her is that you guys are raising money and donating equipment to like VA hospitals.
Yes.
Kind of yes. Looking at their wish list of things that mm-hmm. they could use, but maybe can't afford. It's just not in the budget. Well, and then you guys go out and get, you know, some medical equipment or, you know, physical therapy type equipment or all those types of things and help fill in that gap as well. And that's another amazing benefit of this organization. And so yeah, I wanted to give you a chance to, you know, say your involvement and everything there, because I love the organization. I love, you know, spreading the word about it. And, you know, hopefully for folks who weren't aware of it, now you are, and you can go kind of check it out and, you know, maybe even buy some of the calendars yourself or some of the other merchandise, but that would be great. But, but so again, it just, another role there where you're giving back to other people, going to visit people who are, you know, sick or, you know, recovering from something, a surgery or something like that in one of the VA hospitals. And you go and visit them and let them know that they're not alone, even though maybe they don't have any family and nobody's come to visit them. But then here come these ladies coming in and, you know, putting a big smile on their face and taking them back in time. Maybe if they're one of those older veterans, you know, which is great. So now, I know you had that transition period out of the military, not really knowing what to do. And we kind of talked a little bit about that. But for the listeners, do you have any advice for what they can do to help make that transition a little bit easier? Because one of the things that I find when I talk to other veterans is the transition is usually one of the harder things, not with everybody, but usually that transition, it just comes out of nowhere and smacks them in the face. And they're like, where did this come from? Do you have any advice from your own experience on that transition and how to make it a little bit easier?
I would say finding things that you enjoy, identifying what it is that brings you that joy. Is it volunteering? Is it art? Is it taking care of animals? Who, like, what is it that brings you joy? And digging into that, because you're going to have the uniform for a little bit. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be forever, though. It's going to end, but that time's going to stop. But what doesn't stop is what you're passionate about and what you can give back to others.
Yeah.
I would highly recommend that people get involved in something wherever they're at locally and really help fulfill that space of contentment, that joy, and that purpose. That's where it's going to start. Because even if you're not in that one location for forever either, you're going to be able to take that somewhere else. You're going to be able to still rely and lean back on those things that you've picked up and what you've experienced. Mm-hmm. And you're never going to be in a place feeling like, oh, I shouldn't have done this whenever it comes to taking care of others.
Right, right.
It's never going to be a regret. I feel like it's always going to be something that is paying it forward for you and your heart, for your mind and your soul, and most importantly, for somebody else too.
That's
what I would recommend, is people just getting involved doing something that they really enjoy doing. And then the doors and things will open from there. Just keep it very simple.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can't think of a single time that I've helped somebody with something somewhere along the line that I look back and said, man, that was a dumb move. I should not have done that. You know, like it is definitely something that, you know, maybe it wasn't the greatest experience in the world, but I never regretted it. You know, I never looked at it like this was stupid. I'm never going to do this again, because that was a waste of my time. It was a waste of their time. Everybody, you know, lost on this whole thing. It's like, no, most of the time it turns out to be a positive for everybody. And, you know, even if it's your positive is taking away, hey, I got to help somebody, like that could be, you know, just that little bit of something that just makes you feel good. And so I love that advice that you gave there. And, you know, looking, I think, to the future, I mean, you're balancing all these different roles that you said, you know, kind of veteran advocate, you know, student, a volunteer, all these things that you have going on, and you have all these responsibilities, all these things that you're taking care of, but also in the same time, you're trying to raise awareness for organ donation and supporting people who are organ donors and maybe even recipients and those types of things. What are your goals for the future? Where do you see that next step? You know, now that the organs have been donated, what's the next thing for you?
I would love to see what I do with this doctoral research and whatever I'm able to use for my capstone to see that hopefully implemented in some of these donation centers to specifically help those donors and fill some of the gaps that they're seeing in their own systems, to be able to expand that with Dove and really continue building and enhancing what has been developed by Sharon. She's an amazing woman who created this in 2020. So we're still a relatively new organization and very young. We have a lot that we can do.
Yeah.
So I see this future opening up additional doors and opportunities for donors and even advocacy on Capitol Hill. We're doing a lot of work with the End Kidney Deaths Act and bringing attention and awareness to that and plugging that in and having people contact your senators and your representatives and let them know you want them to be a part of this legislation. Get this moving forward. Please co-sponsor, please co-lead whatever that person is able to do, but be a part of this, because this is how we're really going to change the landscape for saving all of those thousands of people on the kidney transplant list. Mm-hmm. We can get that number to zero if people are just doing the right things and advocating in the right ways. And I think a lot of these things together is exactly how we're going to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know, I think it was in basic training, there was a blood drive that we all went through, and it was, you know, a blood donation. Like, you know, if you've ever done that, it's not that big of a deal. They take a little bit of your blood and then they give you some cookies and you're on your way, you know, and which was pretty amazing for basic training that we were able to get. So it's like, yeah, you know what, for that, you know, a couple of cookies, that sounds like a pretty good idea. Yeah. But, you know, it's helping somebody else, and, you know, the thousands of people out there who donate blood. And again, that's not as invasive as cutting an organ out of you, but it's still helping somebody who might need it desperately. And, you know, that's just another way to help people out. And so again, there are tons of ways to help other people. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is a takeaway is if you're walking around life feeling like you're just missing something, there's just something out there that you don't know what it is, well, just try helping people with something, anything. Help a neighbor, help out at the, you know, local school or a senior center or something, you know, find a place that you can go and find people that you can help and see what happens. And if it's not the thing for you, move on, try something else. But generally when you're helping people, you tend to feel a little bit better, and mm-hmm. you also know that you're making a difference in those people's lives too. So that's definitely great takeaways, I think, from this episode. Anything else before we wrap up that we missed? Anything that you wanted to kind of drop in here?
Yeah, I appreciate you taking the time to be able to speak with me. This is such a really important issue that a lot of people just don't know about. And so what I would really encourage listeners to do is please share the information. Again, organ donation as a living donor is not for everybody, but if it is for you, fantastic. There's great places. Dove is one of those if you're interested in donating a kidney. But there's other places that you can go as well to learn about organ donation. But just sharing the information, getting it out there, because you never know who needs to hear that message. There is somebody out there who is in need of a kidney or a liver or any additional organ, even through deceased donation too. That you still need to get the information out there, because it's going to hit in the right space at the right time.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate anyone who comes forward and would be interested in talking to me about it. I'm happy to share my experience, because I think our stories really connect us.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Lindsay, thank you so much again for coming on the show, sharing your story. Definitely very inspirational story. Like I said, I've been waiting for a while to hear the details of your story and kind of dig into it a little bit. And I certainly was not disappointed with this story. So thank you so much for coming on and sharing it with me and the audience. So thank you.
Thank you so much.